You hear this music? Well, this music's kind of the punchline for a show you're about to hear. Or maybe it's a spoiler. Anyway, this music is sort of what we call our theme music. We use it here. This is called a billboard. We use it during promos. We use it a fair amount. And we had a theme song that we were using. It had run its course. It was time to change. But we didn't really know what the thought process was about theme music. And since we're not particularly bright, the only thing we could think to do would be to do a show about theme music. And then maybe somebody, like one of the guests, would tell us what the thought process is. So that's the show you're about to listen to. It's like how you pick a theme song. So stay tuned. We're going to do it. Hi. In order for you to understand the show you're about to hear, I have to explain to you that for many, many, many years on this show, we used, whenever we needed theme music, a particular song by Prince. We used it in something called the billboard, which precedes the news. We used it in promos. And we used to even open the show every single day with that music and Kyone Wolf talking over it. So on April 9th, 2010, this is how the show, which in a pretty typical way, began. Just looking up, but there's another rocky road. Another heavy wow, another much too heavy, heavy load. Today I'm gonna face it, yeah, cause I'm sick of dealing any other way. Nobody said the race was fair, but I'm gonna keep running just the same. Today, today, it's the first day, the best of my life. Let's go.
Live from Dankowski Community College on Academic Asylum Hill, where Beard Grooming 101 just let out, I'm Kyone Wolf, Dean of Onion Sculpting, and today's show is about the mission of community colleges. Biology with onions, structural engineering with onions, history of the onion. Okay, maybe getting a degree in onionology is in the future, but four great professors join us today. And now, the professor of stain removal, Colin McEnroe.
Now, a lot of people didn't like that song, and they didn't like it right from the get-go. Like when I came over here to this station to start this show, I brought the idea with me. I've always loved the idea of starting a show with that song. But a lot of people didn't like it, and they walked around shaking their heads. And, you know, and at a certain point, it became a little bit more accepted, I think. And then all the people who had really been hating on the song, and I swear to God, this is true, when Prince died, they didn't feel comfortable hating it. So now everybody who hated the song denies ever having hated it. But the truth was, it was at a certain point, particularly after Prince did die, I sort of felt like, well, no, we need something new. I mean, if that's not a sign of the times, what else would there be? So we decided that we had to get a new theme song. And that turned out to be a pretty complicated decision. So in April of 2018, we did the show that you're about to hear. We picked our new theme song in May. So, you know, there's a way in which this show that we did originally, it didn't kind of really end anywhere. It just was like people blathering about theme songs, but in a very entertaining way. So we are going to talk right now to Kate Callahan. She was Connecticut's 16th state troubadour. Her most recent album is Triumph. Jim Chapdelaine, by now you should know who Jim Chapdelaine is. He's on every day, practically. He composed the theme song for WNPR's award-nominated Hartford Yard Goats podcast, the second first season. And he's also won most of the things you need for an EGOT. Definitely Emmys. And I'm going to say maybe a Grammy and a Tony. So they are songwriters. So we thought that we would talk to them about how to write a theme song. Let me just begin by asking the two of you. I'm going to ask Kate first, because I know that Jim's relationship with this question is very complicated. Kate, do you like that song, the stuff that we just played? It's okay to say that you don't like it. We're getting rid of it.
I love it. For me, that song is a rallying cry, which I think is one essential central component of a good theme song. It's something that people hear and they come running, you know, come dialing in to the station, come sit down and turn on the TV, whatever it is, it rallies people.
All right, then we're keeping it. Show's over. Everybody go home. Now, you Jim Chaplin, deny.
I'm unpacking the whole experience now. So you can preface it if you want to.
No, you just dive, right. You dive right.
So I initially was not one of the favorables for that song.
Right.
And now I know why, because I hadn't heard it. Because in the last few years, I'm like, what was I thinking about? This song sounds great. It's because you're using the instrumental section. And I guess the Today, Today, Today sounded a little bit too happy for a show where some people – you have a show about people who drink their own urine.
Right. What's not happy about that?
Well, I'm not one of those people, so I don't get that. So, but you helped unpack that. So my complex relationship was explained. I forgot that there were vocals to it.
Right. There were days where we didn't use the theme right. song because it was too happy and we were doing a much
And now
more.
You've moved on to a period where you use the instrumental donut, right?
Right. And so, Kate, you don't feel – so when we played it for one of the Steve Metcalfs, not the one that you know, but the other one, the Slate Culture Gabfest one, uh-huh. he said it sounded like a jazzercise class.
I mean, it's terrible in its awesomeness. I think it's – I mean, I remember when that – was used, and it made me want to listen.
Well, I mean, that would be a goal of theme music,
yeah.
right?
Right. Yeah.
But the question is, did you want to listen because the show is great? And then eventually you come to associate that, which happens sometimes.
Right.
That song just pulled me out of whatever I was doing, whether that was a pull that I could digest or not, it did pull me out of whatever I was doing, so I would listen.
I mean, the problem with any theme song, I think, also is some people are going to like it, but some people are going to hate it. And if you really don't – I mean, I've heard from people who even factoring for the fact that, as Jim says, we're only using the instrumental donut now and we're only using it for 60 seconds before the show and during the promos, have said that they do not listen to my show because – of that music because it bothers them so much.
That's a pretty strong stance, right. Don't you think?
Although I should say, if you podcast the show, like Nessa Rose is listening to the show in Chile right now, and she just is completely unaware or baffled by what we're talking about, because if you don't listen to a broadcast version of our show, you don't ever hear that music. You don't hear promos. You don't hear billboards. You don't have – so I'm sorry, Nessa, if this is confusing to you. All right. So what we did was – so Kate and I both know this one person named Steve Metcalf. And he's the kind of person who likes to think about stuff like this. So Jonathan McNichol and I went off to see Steve Metcalf to ask him some deep questions about theme music.
As I was thinking about this, I began thinking about the themes either to movies or TV shows that have lasted a long time, that are still in our heads and still in the culture. And I could think of no better example, actually, than the one that goes something like this. Which, of course, is the James Bond theme. But the interesting thing about this one is that it sort of has different layers. It sort of comes at you in several different waves. So there's that lick, which is mysterious and which establishes that we're dealing with maybe a spy or kind of mystery movie. But then the very next lick that comes along is this one, usually played by guitar. And that's a little jauntier, a little more lighthearted. It sort of tells us that this is not entirely serious and we can kind of sit back. And then the third one...
It's sort of Felix lighter.
Exactly. And then the third one is the one that goes like this. Which is even a little jazzier and I think a little lighter, and to me sort of calls up, you know, Connery coming into the casino with his dinner jacket on, about to win a quick, you know, 40 grand at the baccarat table. but the point is, the great thing about this is that it really perfectly kind of prepares us for what kind of movie it is and what's the tone of it. And yes, there's intrigue and a little mystery and you know, sort of thrillerdom, but it's lighter than that, and there's playfulness, and there's a kind of a winking at the violence.
So what you're saying so far is that we would guess probably that the theme music wouldn't be completely randomized. It's not just some catchy tune that might that the people who write this music probably do think a little bit about how it's going to mesh with the actual final product.
Well, that's right.
So one of the problems that we have right now, the problem that we're trying to solve, is that sometimes we are lyrical and lighthearted, and sometimes we are a little bit more serious about what we're doing. And I think it's easy to get one or the other. It's hard to get both.
First of all, this is one of the great movie themes of all time, in my opinion. This is the theme to The Apartment, Billy Wilder's movie, with Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine. And as I think you'll see, the great thing about this tune is that it is both kind of rom-com. I mean, there's a Hollywood-y romance to this theme, but also a little darkness, a little drama. And of course, there is a drama to this movie, and it is both at the same time. And it goes like this. So on.
So another thing, obviously, that we could say about the show that we're trying to help out right now, my show, is that it's a talk show. It's a show that people come on, and it's not a talk show like The Tonight Show, but it's a talk show. But we might as well play The Tonight Show theme song, because that probably is about us.
Yeah, which worked very well, I think, in just preparing, again, for the fact that this was going to be, I don't know, a sort of variety show. It just had that feel to it.
Which is by
a Paul Anka tune, by the way.
Yeah, we were thinking about using an instrumental version of Having My Baby, which is also by Paul Anka. One thing that you said as we were kind of getting ready for this is probably repurposing any piece of music has risks to it, that probably we should get somebody to write something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it has risks both ways, though, right? I mean, if you get something that people know, then it draws them in. But, you know, if it sends the wrong message somehow. I remember years ago, I can't remember the name of the conductor, who told me that for years he had played the Lone Ranger theme to his children's concerts, and the kids all, you know, were delighted to recognize it. We're talking, of course, written by that well-known theme composer, Rossini. But then one day he played it and he turned around expecting them to all be squealing and happily recognize it, and there was nothing. And he realized that, like, overnight the show had apparently gone out of syndication, and suddenly it just reverted back to being a 19th century Italian opera overture. So there's a danger both ways.
Do you have any last pieces of advice for us as we...
No, I want to play one more.
One more,
and
okay.
It goes like this. And I just want to play it because the other day, this is a true story, there were some kids behind my backyard playing basketball, like middle school kids, and one of the kids came out of the house dressed in something crazy, and the other kids started singing that theme. So I'm assuming that means that it's been used on South Park or something, because how else would they know that?
Well, also,
but
Bob,
anyway, it lives on.
Yeah. Bob Mueller plays it also in his office every day, actually, just to get the troops fired up. All right, Steve Metcalf, thank you so much for your musical wisdom and your piano talent.
All right, so now we're transported back into our other studio. That was his living room. We're back into our other studio with Jim Chaplin and Kate Callahan. All right, so... Wow, he's really thought this stuff. Kate, he's really thought these things through. I don't think I'd really given that much thought to, say, the James Bond theme song. But I think he's right about all that stuff.
My goodness, he has thought things through. And I was doing the same thing, you know, preparing for this show. And I was thinking about the one thing that seems quintessentially theme song, and that is the ability for a song to help people commune with each other. And I was thinking about that, and I had a contrast going in my head. I remember in 1994, my friend Anna Emily gave me a copy of Sarah McLachlan's album Fumbling Toward Ecstasy. Mm-hmm. And I put that on my headphones, and the music just begged me to isolate and be with it and listen and listen and listen. And then if you think back maybe 10 years prior to that, and the movie Ghostbusters comes out, and then a theme song like the Ghostbusters, you know, it draws people to each other. It unites people in its hilarity. And I think that's the uniting quality is important for a theme song.
Although I think your love is better than ice cream is a very uniting statement.
Good
yeah.
call.
So, that's like my one act of retrieval from my brain that I'm going to do all day today, but I'm feeling good about it. So, I don't know, Jim, I'm just going to let you react to that, and then we're going to take a quick break.
You notice he's drawing from a period of time when theme songs were really theme songs.
Do you think they're less important now? Or?
No, I think we've come full circle.
Yeah.
And I think we owe that. So maybe in the 90s, there were still some pretty strong theme songs happening. I don't know when theme songs turned into sound designs for a while.
Right.
And so they were just a sound that sort of triggered you to recognize what you're about to hear. But then you started seeing stuff like The Sopranos. And that became an automatic, like your mouth waters when you hear that song.
Right.
And I would say the same thing with Game of Thrones. These big, part of that is because they could afford graphics mm-hmm. for these big opens.
Yeah.
And I think those songs kind of brought the drama back. You know, there's a little Perry Mason happening again.
Right. And some of those things are also nicely eternal. Like when we were just sort of tuning up here and sound checking, I think you played the Barney Miller lick. Can you play that? Okay. See, I don't think that could be a theme song for anything now. I think that kind of belongs.
Definitely not Game of Thrones.
Yeah, definitely. It belongs in its time period.
Dem Throne.
So speaking of that, we're about to go into a little pledge drive thing, and I'm sure everything that's happened so far on this show has really made you want to give money. And so
and be rest assured that I won't get any of it.
You're not supposed to laugh when we say that. So Jim, because he can do these things, he can write these songs.
I will say that I came in with a Post-it. Yeah. This is on a Post-it. and then I woke up this morning and thought, I should make music to it, too. What the heck?
Right. So he has this Post-it. It's a blue Post-it. And then he kind of shows it. He waves it at Kate and goes.
Said, Kate, you do this. Good luck.
And so do you want maybe,
you know what I would say?
Let's do a rehearsal. Are we going to try to sing with him the first time, or are we just going to?
Maybe not.
No, okay. So here's
what
the pitch. You're going to just.
Play it?
Play it.
All right, so. Coming up's a number you should call it. First go find your credit card or wallet. Make sure if you're driving you. Wait, make sure you pull over if you're driving in a car. It's a perfect time to donate to WNPR.
I would just like to say, in Kate's and possibly my defense, he doesn't even really sing it the way he wrote it on the Post-it.
It's
evolving.
It barely exists in my head.
It's evolving.
You know,
right.
How could it exist on a Post-it?
So as you guys get ready for the pledge break, we're going to try to get you in the mood to pledge by doing the new pledge break theme song. So, Jim?
2, 3, 4. Coming up's a number you should call it. First, go find your credit card or wallet. Make sure you pull over if you're driving in a car. It's a perfect time to donate to WNPR.
Oh, that's a take. That's a wrap. All right. I think it's fair to say that we would not be doing the episode that we're doing right now were it not for something that I heard, as it turned out, about 3 or 4 years ago on one of my favorite podcasts. That's the Slate Culture Gabfest. And they did something which, in retrospect, was really, really smart. They were changing their theme song And rather than just making whatever set of internal determinations one makes and then springing it on the unsuspecting public, they cut the public in on the decision-making process. Before I bring aboard one of our guests here, Stephen Metcalf, let's hear what their old theme sounded like. So this is December 2014.
I'm Stephen Metcalf, and this is the Slate Culture Gabfest Rock, Paper, Scissors edition. It's Wednesday, December 10th, 2014. On today's show, Wild is the new film from the director of Dallas Buyers Club, a movie.
All right, so Stephen Metcalf, Slate's critic at large and co-host of the Slate Culture Gabfest, is now sitting up there in Hudson, New York, dabbing at his eyes with a nostalgic handkerchief.
Dabbing in my ears in order to not hear the sound of my own voice, Colin, please.
Well, those were the days anyway. So at a certain point, you decided that this was not going to be your theme song anymore. Can you remember what occasioned that turn of mind?
Well, backing up a little bit, no one, as far as I know, maybe the great algorithm in the sky decided to make that first one our theme song. It was pulled probably from the internet for free and slapped onto our show back in the day when a podcast was really just three, you know, people and a microphone, and was in keeping with the kind of insouciant attitude that podcasts were made with. But after a while, it's so goofy listening to it now. I mean, I haven't heard it in forever. But it's like nothing about that riff, that kind of laid-back, you know, Santa Monica riff, connected to what the energy or attitude of our show was. So we decided to correct that going forward.
So you did this really brilliant thing. You worked with a composer named Nick Britell, and all of you, the three hosts of the show, talked a little bit about who you were and what your afflatus was and how that might contribute to the musical imprint that he would create. Let's hear Nick Britell talking about that creative brief he was given when the new theme was commissioned from you guys.
There were a lot of different ideas that were presented for exploration of what we would do with the music. And there were various things from polyvocal to represent your three voices, words like granola, Kierkegaard, gamelan, spilkis were mentioned, a strut quality, something that could challenge people but doesn't trouble the conscience, I think was mentioned. Some of the takeaways were it felt like we should try having some sort of a beat felt interesting. Also, guitar seemed to be something which wasn't absolutely necessary, but a lot of the things that you listened to or talked about felt like they had a guitar element that you liked. So some of the stuff that I have here has guitar. And a few of the other terms, there was non-Western pop, Indonesian bird song was mentioned, Swedish emo.
I'm just listening, and I'm thinking, Nick Britell, you poor bastard.
It sounds kind of like he was being punked, right? Like, I mean, how do you ever take that salad, that, like, half-rotten salad of words and non-words and semi-concepts and actually crank out a piece of music? I mean, incredible that he came up with anything.
We should mention that the people cackling in the background include Dana Stevens and Julia Turner, your two co-conspirators on this show. So I want to just cut right to the chase because people are now at the edge of their seats. Those people who are foolish enough not to be chronic listeners to the Slate Culture Gabfest the way I am, they're thinking, well, what came out of this? What manticore was assembled from these disparate parts? So here's how the show opened in January of 2015.
Stephen Metcalf, and this is the Slate Culture Gabfest, the Brio of the Buoy edition. It's Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. On today's show, Mr. Turner is the new film from director Mike Leigh about the great English painter J.M.W. Turner. And then Lee Daniels has created a sudsy new hour-long for Fox. It's about a music mogul.
All right, so that's the way things have sounded forever since. I'm going to be honest with you and say my first reaction when the song was first debuted, you know, there's always the shock of the new. There's the potential for Stravinsky-type Rite of Spring riots among the populace. And my first reaction was, you know, there's an old joke about how a camel is a horse created by committee. And I sort of thought, well, this almost does sound a little bit like that. It's such an assemblage of these sensibilities that I can sort of hear them all. Now, my feelings about this have transmogrified completely. And I listened to that song just now with great fondness. I associate it with a show that I like a lot. But initially I thought, wow, maybe he tried too hard to get you guys.
You know, it's funny. I don't listen to my own podcast, so that's the second time I've heard that theme song. And it hasn't grown on me yet.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with Nick, whose talents are unlimited, really, in this regard, and more to do with exactly what you said, which is that it's this Frankensteinian hodgepodge, really. But, you know, at the end of the day, and Colin, you'll appreciate this, this is an entirely Pavlovian exercise. Mm. I mean, if we were able to wipe our minds completely clean of our associations, musical associations, behind the words The Beatles, which is the most inane pun of all time, or The Rolling Stones. I mean, there are so many bad names out there that are now so filled in with the content that underlies them. They have no independent existence as signifiers at all. And I think theme songs are like that, too. I mean, you know, when I hear... You know, when I know that Michael Barbaro's voice is about to enter my earpiece, I mean, any piece of music could be playing, you know, for the Daily Podcast or your show or any show that, you know, one listens to over and over and over again. That it is an entirely triggered and almost involuntary response as long as you actually like the content.
Right. Well, Stephen Metcalf, I know you have many things to do, but people who don't listen should listen to Slate Culture Gabfest.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Colin. It is always a pleasure.
All right, so we're back in the studio now. It will be noted that there are two different guests named Stephen Metcalf on the show, which I'm not sure I've really acknowledged so far.
Super meta.
Isn't that?
It's
yeah.
Meta Metcalf.
And there's like this other Stephen Metcalf who works for, I think he works for Under Armour, doesn't he, Jonathan? And we always try to get him on too. Like just, we should have called him up and asked him his favorite theme songs.
Is there not a legal limit to right. Stephen Metcalf's?
Well,
so far, they all delivered.
Yeah, we'd like to explore that. So Kate Callahan, that's not Kate Callahan who was just talking, is Connecticut's 16th state troubadour. She is in the studio right now. So is Jim Chapdelaine, a guitar hero, activist, producer, lots of other things. You know, Jim, he's right about, like, I don't know whether the Tonight Show theme song's a good song or not. It's just the music they were playing when the Tonight Show. I mean, he's right that at a certain point, the musical content of a theme song begins to be less and less relevant.
Because you can't disassociate anymore.
Right.
So he's right about the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, too, just being arbitrary words until the ballast of all that content is there. And now they can't be flipped. I don't think they could be anything else. So there are pieces of music, I'm sure, that you know, and this probably varies from person to person, that occupy places that's the only thing that music could be.
All right. Now let's talk about what happens when a songwriter gets asked to write a song of this kind. So Kate Callahan, in 2014, April 14th, the city of Hartford declared Look for the Good Day. I must have missed Look for the Good Day.
You sure did, and you missed it every year since, as did the rest of us. But on April 14th, 2014, we had a large event in the Pond House in Elizabeth Park, and we honored Ann Kubitsky, the founder of the Look for the Good Project, an anti-bullying nonprofit. And I was asked months ahead of time to write something to commemorate this day. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, if the city of Hartford sat down and sang a song, it would probably be a blues. Mm-hmm. And so I worked with a little bit of an uplifting blues. And I think the hook is an important part of a theme song. Mm-hmm. And so... So I got my twist on the blues, and then I got my hook. And if we look for the good, we'll get on the other side. And that was it. You know, if we look for the good, we'll get on the other side. It felt like that's something that I could hear Hartford mm-hmm. sort of singing in its personified version. And the song was debuted with a gospel choir, the Lift Every Voice and Sing Gospel Choir, Hartford-based community choir.
Can we play a little bit of the finished product just so people can kind of hear it?
Absolutely.
All right, so let's try that right now, John.
Everywhere a wall stands bare between your fear and your life. Well, you're now a wall, like you know your pride. And if we look for that good, we'll get on the other side.
I just had an aperçu about theme songs listening to that. And so Jim and I are now going to react to the theme song. I have a very specific reaction that came to me during that theme song. But do you want to react first or do you want to hear my reaction?
No, I want to hear your specific
I think it's
reaction.
Too good to be a theme song. I was listening to it and I was thinking, well, first of all, I'm a big Kate Callahan fan anyway, so you can't necessarily go by me. But, you know, at its best, Kate's music is very transcendent. I mean, very transcendent. I mean, I've had like these really almost kind of epiphanic, angelic experiences listening to it live. And even, you know, the beginning chords of this, Jim, it really does kind of lift you up into a place that's sort of...
Sure.
It's a little bit bigger than some...
Well, it's a real song.
Yeah.
Start with that, the fact that it's a real song.
Yeah.
And so whatever rubric was in place was you really loosely followed it for just this really good feeling thing.
Right.
Sometimes you have to stick closer, depending on what the level of supervision is.
Mm. Right.
You have to stick really close and stay right in the lanes. But it's great mm-hmm. when you have the freedom, like Kate did, to write a really cool song and have that do both things.
Right. I think it's a beautiful, special, memorable song, and as such, an abject failure. Because it can't write something worse. You have to write something worse because it can't be in the service of something else. You know, a song that's I think that song has a kind of purity where it just, you know, I don't want it doing anybody else's dirty work, even though obviously Look for the Good Day. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
And that explains really why Colin hasn't been to Look for the Good Day. He just can't put himself through
that. I wouldn't even know how to function on Look for the Good Day. I've spent so much time looking for the bad. All right. So, and now, Jim, let's go over to you. You were approached, actually, by the producer of this very episode of our show, Jonathan McNichol, who was doing a podcast called The Second First Season. It was about the Yard Goats' attempt to actually get on the playing field and play baseball. It was about many, many other things, too. And so he asked you to write some kind of theme song. Do you want to talk about what your process was?
Yeah.
And then we can do the thing where we actually play this song.
Sure. Here was the process. I think he contacted me on a Tuesday. And he said, hey, you know, I'm looking for this thing. I don't want it to be like anything that's on NPR. I want it to be a little more raw and gritty and, you know, not digital sounding or something like that. And I'm like, oh, that's great, great, you know. And then he said, so when do you need it? He said, Thursday. And so this was – I had 2 hours on a Wednesday to write this and then record all the parts. And lucky for me, Pants was a very forgiving guy.
Rossini often banged those, you know, Lone Ranger things out pretty fast too.
Yeah.
So all right.
I just sat and I wrote out a chord chart and I came up with a little melody in my head and then I just blasted out. Everything is one take on this.
All right. Here we go. The one take theme song to The Second First Season. I should say, every time this song gets played on WNPR, Jim receives $0.
I know.
The same amount of money he was paid for.
I feel like it's not coming in right now.
But see, see,
and
Kate,
that's without a melody, but there's that little hook. It's sort of skanky.
Once again, I have my own little reaction. Mm. Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
You go first.
I think that first group of descending notes has the quality of saying to me, something is about to happen, right? Like, you know...
Yeah, it's
right?
The rallying call. Again,
yeah, we're back to the rallying
call.
Yeah. Like, get over here. Something's about to happen, jerk face.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
it's not, unlike Look for the Good, it's not necessarily a pleasant invitation.
Right. No, it does say jerk face. You know, and in fact, everything on there is distorted using a plugin called jerk face. Everything got run right through the jerk face on that. But in the end, when you're constricted with time, that ends up being really fun for me. Like, right. I sort of can't fail because he has to use it the next day, you know? So even if he hates it, right. he still has to use it at least once.
Yeah. No, and I actually, you know, as somebody who was also very devoted to that podcast, I came to have the Pavlovian, you know, thing where that would come on and the notes would start and I would go, okay, I'm here. You know, it's about to happen. I think that really works as a theme song. And I think because you spent all of 2 hours on it, you don't have to worry about it, you know, outstripping the needs of being a theme song.
It'll never be anything but that theme right. song.
We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to come back with more of this fascinating discussion of theme songs right after the proverbial this.
It starts off with this very high-tech syntho-sequency type thing, like this. That's the news. Then the strings take the melody.
All right, that's from Broadcast News, where these two jerk faces actually do come in and do a pitch, basically. That's them pitching a new news theme. In studio with me right now are two wonderful songwriters, Kate Callahan, Jim Chapdelaine, producer, activist, theme songwriter, guitarist. He's so many things. I'd be here all day trying to explain it all. It would take forever, yeah. So
jerk faces.
Jerk faces. That's right. As we're sort of kind of heading down the home stretch here, I thought, because you guys are like super creative people, I thought one thing that we could do, and I'll start with you, Jim, what we did do, and I'll just remind everybody that the reason we're having this conversation is we've got this music that's written by Prince that we've been using behind our promos and our billboards. And back in the day, we used to use it, you know, as the actual theme song and stuff like that. And then there's this other music that we use that I think we'll probably keep, that we use when Kion Wolf is doing the thank yous and or the credits or whatever you might want to call them. That's actually from Get Smart, but we might keep that. But right now, maybe Kate, I just got to do a few really quick thank yous. Can you just give me like a little instrumental bed here for the thank yous? All right, I got to thank a whole lot of people here. Although really today's show was a very eccentric project by me and Jonathan McNichol. And everybody else kind of backed away from it. But our other producers include senior producer Betsy Kaplan and Josh DeLea. Kion Wolf is our technical producer. She's the person who makes the show sound as good as it frequently does. The part of Bill Curry today was played by Big Al Anderson. And so here we are. We're coming right back to Jim and Kate here in the studio. Thank yous done. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to see you guys are spontaneous. You're loose. So I'm going to read three adjectives. The producers, Betsy Kaplan, Josh Nalea, Kion Wolf, and Jonathan McNichol, they got together and they came up with adjectives to describe the show or what they think a theme song for the show should be. And so I'm going to read three adjectives to each one of them, or maybe three or four. Let's see. So for Jim, you can go first. Corny, edgy, groovy. Corny, edgy, groovy. Wow. Give me corny, edgy, groovy.
Corny and edgy. Those are...
But you can do this. That's right. I want you to like take that whole Zen problem. I love it.
I don't know if that was any of those things.
I think it was all those things. Okay, so I'm trying to pick them also like so they'll fit the songwriter a little bit. So Kate... Curious.
Thanks for corny. Yeah.
So.
Well, no, I knew you'd have a humorous take on corny. Curious, moody, and upbeat. So moody and upbeat are obviously.
Can you play something for me and I'll sing a little?
Sure, oh, yeah. Sure.
Curious, moody, upbeat.
Yeah, here we go.
Okay, so curious, moody, upbeat would be.
Thank you.
sorry.
That, okay, that was pretty amazing that you guys just did that. I just want to say. I mean, amazing in a good way, too. All right. Well, you know, we're sort of out of time here, but I'll give you an opportunity to, if you have a last piece of advice for us as we try to pick out a theme. Jim, have you learned anything from this experience that would help you help us?
I learned that Kate and I should probably work together with adjectives more often.
Let's do it.
No, this is really fun. I mean, how do you pick one? I mean, I don't know how you pick it because remember – whatever you pick right now has no connotation. Right. But in a year from now, it will have the full connotation of the Colin McEnroe Show. So it'll become good no matter what it is.
Kate, any last words?
Yeah, I mean, being a fan of the original, the Prince song, I think not to be afraid of polarizing people. I think sometimes, I mean, in business marketing, we learn that the more polarizing you are, the more money you make. So that's my last piece of advice.
Certainly in polarizing times.
Right. We are in polarizing times. So what, you may ask, did we do after all this talking and crying and screaming? Well, ultimately what we did was we picked a song that you're about to hear. We've been using it since May. The theme song is called Rip Rip, which I actually did not even know until this very moment, by David Holmes. And it's from the score to Steven Soderbergh's movie Out of Sight, which is a really good movie. The voice you hear in some versions of the theme song, including the one that's going to come up right here, is Don Cheadle in the role of Maurice Snoopy Miller. So here's our theme song.